welcome to the committee. We, I love saying it. It's 1 o'clock, right on the money, because we always start on time. We have just a reminder, housekeeping, these funny little things we wear in our hips. It's always good to put them on vibrate ahead of time so it's not so embarrassing. Present today, Representative Guttenberg, Edgemond, Seaton, Roses, Wilson, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gatto. First of all, Senator Huggins, certainly privileged to have you join us at the table here. I want to begin also with, sit next to Bob Roses.
Because, oh, not that seat.
The best seat in the house,
all set, man. By the room.
War of, remember that
just
film?
Watch out for the right elbow.
War of the Roses?
That was a good movie.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Seaton here, who was pretty instrumental in bringing this presentation together. I want to acknowledge some people. Dr. Godwin Chukwu from Petroleum Development Lab, Institute of Northern Engineering, UA Fairbanks, in person here. Kathy Forster via teleconference with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Kevin Banks in the audience, Acting Director of Division of Oil and Gas. Mike Gradassi, who's probably listening to me because he's in Anchorage, victim of weather. With BP's Conversion Technology Center. And then there is a probably a huge time zone difference, about 8 hours, so it's probably 9 p.m. for Peter Cook, Sasol, Chevron, calling teleconference from London. So I certainly want to thank him for using up his evening that way. For the record, I did want to say this to the audience, and I'm pretty sure you know, but we confuse gas to liquids all the time with liquid natural gas. It's just three letters. They sound the same. For the record, liquid natural gas is at minus 280 degrees. Otherwise, it doesn't stay a liquid. It boils away. LNG that we're talking about is a liquid at room temperature.
GTO.
I'm sorry. I said it wrong, didn't I?
Yeah.
No laughing on teleconference. If you're going to laugh, you have to be here. So I've just done the same thing I said we shouldn't do. With that, I will ask Dr. Godwin Chukwu from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, who is here to make a presentation.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Dr. Chukwu is with us by teleconference because, as most everybody, planes did not fly. So he's on teleconference.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And you have the beeper for changing his slides.
So, Doc, are you there?
I am here, sir. Mr. Chairman, good afternoon. Sorry, unfortunately, I couldn't be there today. Well, I was stuck at Fairbanks Airport.
I have the little device in my hand that changes the slides, and the slides are numbered.
Okay.
But not being able to see you, I can't get a visual cue to change the slides, so you could just say next and occasionally say 14 to make sure we're on the right number.
Mr. Chairman, I'll do that.
With that, I'm going to have to move myself because I'm not able to follow them, so just 1 second here. Doctor, go right ahead. We're ready for you.
Okay, sir. I welcome everybody to this presentation. I had earlier on talked about gas to liquid in London and in some other places, and I was to make a presentation to the Chamber of Commerce in Anchorage, but due to conflict of scheduling, I was not able to do that, but I hope to do that sometimes. I'm really honored to be asked to make this testimony today regarding the work that we've been doing here since 1997 at UAF. We have done this work in two phases. One was to check the possibility of the modes of transportation of GTL through the Trans-Alaskan pipeline system. And after the completion of that work in 2001-2002, we were able to get funding to continue working in the area of trying to identify the problems that would actually exist if GTL were to be transported through the taps. Eventually, that work has been concluded, and we are putting the final report together now to be approved or acceptable to DOE that funded the project. Slide number, the project outline, I guess slide number two.
And we have that for us now.
Yeah,
okay.
You can assume we have it whenever you say it.
This is just an outline of the area that I'm going to be covering. I will touch a little bit on the gas resources, the utilization options, and focus on what actually do we want to accomplish in this project or in this analysis, the project statement, and what some other people might have conceived as a possible solution. Then give a little overview. Louis told me that there are some people here that actually are not familiar with gas to liquid, what the technology, what is it all about. And then I will get over to the main work, talk about the two modes of transportation issues that we looked at, and try to pick one of them and did a complete operational analysis on what would be the challenges if we were to follow this transportation mode to move the GTL products through Trans-Alaskan pipeline system, what would be the problem that would actually exist, if at all? Next slide, please. Alaskan gas resources. Many people have given different figures on what are the proven and recoverable conventional natural gas reserves in Alaska. But what I have here is 38 plus trillion cubic feet. Why I put plus is because some people put it at 40, some put it at 37, some put it at 39. But whatever be the case, we have tremendous amount of recoverable natural gas reserve in the state of Alaska. Prudhoe Bay, Point Thompson, just to mention a few. And we also have some possibilities of much gas in Anwa. And also, we have gas through the technology of gas hydrate that also many of you must have heard about, and through the coal bed methane. So all put together, Alaska has tremendous amount of resources in the gas area. But what we do with this gas, how do we monetize the gas, is something that we need to look at today, or we need to talk about. Next slide, please. What will be the utilization options? Everybody is aware of the current plan now of building a new gas pipeline. That will be one option. And previously, we've been using gas as an injector, miscible injector for enhanced oil recovery. And then another option would be to build a natural gas-based petrochemical complex. And we could use this also for electrical power generation, but how much of it we have to use has to be determined. Another option would be burning the natural gas to generate steam for potential thermal recovery options also at the slope or at cooking lead. And then the chemical conversion to GTL products and transporting this through the Trans-Alaskan pipeline system. And this is the focus of the discussion today. Next slide, please. Then what do we consider to be the problem statement of this project? We have the dwindling oil production on the Alaska North Slope, and this actually has created some burden on the transportation of crude on the throughput through the Trans-Alaskan pipeline system. And how do we continue to operate the task economically if we have this dwindling situation of productivity? Now, what do we do with such amount of gas? The domestic gas market is very far away from Alaska North Slope, and the local demand is very minimal. And we have limited need for natural gas use in EOR and other operations. So these are some of the options, but what will be the problem statement? Next slide, please. So we have combination of two-part problem statement that can lead to a feasible solution here. One of them will be the vast natural gas resources on the Alaska North Slope. We can convert this gas to gas to liquid using a technology that was developed during the World War II. We call the Fischer-Tropsch technology process. And these so-called GTL products can be utilized to fill up the Trans-Alaskan pipeline system with the crude oil. So that will be what we are looking at. Is it possible, even if we find a way to transport this GTL product, is it possible to do it given the conditions under which we are environmentally and operational-wise? Next slide, please. So what is gas-to-liquid technology? It's a three-step Fischer-Tropsch chemical process that converts the methane to synthetic crude, and we get clean diesel, we get naphtha, and we get kerosene. So this is a direct production of three key products, diesel, naphtha, and kerosene. And next slide, please. Next slide gives us an idea of what the liquid GTL technology is all about. This project is not actually geared towards the kinetics of GTL technology. We are not involved with looking at the technology of GTL, but we are looking at the transportability of GTL through the existing infrastructure here, which is the TAPS. Next slide, please. This is also to give an idea of how we can convert the natural gas to usable liquid. Please feel free, if you have any questions on any of these slides, please stop me and ask questions. Next slide, please. This is the simplest form to make people understand how the GTL technology works. You have the natural gas, the methane, combining with steam and oxygen to give us the carbon monoxide and hydrogen, and then in the presence of a catalyst, what actually differentiates one type of productivity of GTL from another is the type of catalyst that is used.
Doc, I'm going to ask you, when you say it needs oxygen, do you mean normal air, or do you have to have refined oxygen?
We have to have refined oxygen, yes. Next slide, please. Why do we need the technology now? We have significant worldwide volumes of stranded gas reserves, so this is why the technology has been a worldwide event. For some of you that read the handout or the chairman's opening remark that I sent to Louis, everybody believes that this is a technology that should be actually looked into, despite the high cost, but is a technology that is going to gain a widespread attention as we continue, you will see. And then we have to diversify the marketing options. And this is a technology that produces environmentally friendly fuels. And why do we have to get into this technology at this time? Technology advances have significantly reduced capital costs. There was a news release that Louis sent to me, I think somebody else sent to him, about ExxonMobil withdrawing from the Qatar project as a result of high cost. That is true. But then there are some other activities that are going on in Qatar, like the Sasol project and the Shell project. But it's just that one project couldn't go through because of one reason or the other attributed to cost. Then why do we have to introduce this technology in Alaska? Right now, we have no economic gas utilization option unless, as we are talking about it, gas pipeline now. So we need to investigate all potential options so that we can keep the taps operating, because we need to increase the throughput in taps. Next slide, please. What will be the benefits of gas to liquid products? This is an attractive way to utilize the Alaskan North Slope gas resources. It's a clean source of energy and environmentally friendly. And the most important thing that this project is focusing on is using the existing infrastructure that we have in place. We are also looking, this is an ongoing work we are doing now, to look at using GTL as a diluent in future diverse throughput of Alaska North Slope heavy oils. When we produce all these heavy oils from the slope, we need to transport them. And if we can mix them with GTL, we are going to reduce the pumpability of this GTL crude mixture. Let me use that mixture for now because there is a name for it as we progress. Next slide, please. I didn't know who will be in attendance until Louis sent me the list, so I wanted to update people on what the task features will be. When I went to London last 2 years, they were asking me, what is this task about? How big is it? We've been hearing of it, so I decided to include this information. But for all of us here in the state of Alaska, I think this is an information that we know. But if you look at the fifth bullet, the task was designed for 2.2 million barrels of throughput per day. And literature tells us now that we are pumping less than 800,000 or thereabouts today. So we have declining throughput through taps. And then for the continued operation of taps, that will require significant increase in throughput. Next slide, please. So based on this premise, we decided to focus our attention to TAPS, transportation of GTL through TAPS. One is to look at the introduction of GTL products and what problems would they pose and challenges to the operation of the pipeline. This is a major part of the project. And what problems actually would we anticipate? We have what we call the gel formation, the building of very viscous fluid as we introduce the GTL through the pipeline, either pumping it independent of the crude oil or pumping it mixed with the crude oil. This will pose some problem, especially during the cold weather shutdown times. There might be a possibility of vapor formation. We call this one flashing. I think my colleagues in Alaska will give you a better term for this, that when we are producing at a very high vapor pressure, we tend to flash. We tend to release some of the gas ahead of the liquid, and this might cause some pump cavitation, which is not good. So we want to identify if this is a problem in transporting the GTL through the taps. And also, we want to know the type of fluids the final fluid that is going to be in existence in the tap, and what actually the pumping requirements with regards to the pressure is going to be. And the major work, actually, the major area of focus will be the solids precipitation and deposition, which actually could lead to pipe failure or failure somewhere along the pipeline. So if you have deposits of wax or asphaltene, with time they will build, and this can cause in-situ corrosion and cause pipe failure. Next slide, please. Again, we looked at different ways that we could move the GTL crude oil products through the taps. We looked at what we call the batch flow. This is also known as a slugging. This is alternate batches or slugs of crude oil and GTL that are moved through the taps. And then we have the commingled flow, where we mix the crude oil and the GTO. We pre-mix them and then get them ready for transportation to the pipeline as a single fluid phase. Next slide, please. We looked at different ways that we could batch the slug and also the GTL slug and the crude oil. We looked at three different ways of batching. We have the batch mode A, we called it, which actually is as-is batching. That is, just send everything as it is, and this is the simplest way of batching. This represented a best case or a do-nothing case. Okay? And do-nothing in the sense that it is investment-free. You don't have to invest any more thing or too much money in order to follow this mode of transportation. But this will involve some manual operation of switching from one tank battery to the other. Then we have the batching mode B. This is the one we call the batching with pigs. We use pigs as a spacer between the GTL crude stream. And we are going to talk more about this in detail as we go along. And we looked at the third part, which we call the batch mode C, the modern batching. This is the situation where we install probes somewhere along the line, the flow path, and these are all tied to automatic control valves to divert fluids to their respective tanks. So this is something we call the distributed control system, which is actually automated, and there will be very much easier to distribute the fluids to the tank batteries accordingly. And we have the second type of transportation we call the commingled mode, which we defined earlier. Next slide, please. Talk a little bit about the mulch mode, which is do nothing or as is. The backlogs of GTL and crude oil, letting physics, this is, we let the physics of the fluids control slug movement in the taps. Some of the problems that we found out with this technique was, this will require pipeline to be built from the GTL plant to the taps inlet in order for us to use this technique. And this will also require extra storage facility that will be needed to store products waiting to be batched. But,
Dr.
Yes, sir.
Chairman.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Could you repeat that? I missed the first part of the qualifications on that.
Oh, this will require building, building a GTL plant to the tap inlet, because you need to have a storage area where you can put the GTL before you then put into the taps.
Okay, so then it's a storage area, storage tanks, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. But this batch mode A requires minimal additions to capital and labor. You know, we defined it as do nothing. We don't have much expense in following this mode of transportation. But then there will be increased levels of mixing between the slugs. And these increased levels of mixing will result to creation of an interface zone. And up till now, there isn't any systematic model that can tell us the length of the interface zone. Though we have come up with a model, but we are not able to verify it unless we run a field test. The interface zone that we determine theoretically runs about 300 to 500 feet in length. And then the size and length of the zone will depend on the fluid properties, the viscosity, the velocity, and the density differences. So these are some of the problems that will be actually encountered if we have to follow this mode of transportation. Next slide, please. Then the Bajmot B, that is the one with pigs. And this is traditionally batching with pigs, physically separating the oil and the GTL. And the number of pigs that are run, if we have to follow this mode of transportation, is going to be dependent on the size, the optimum size of the slug. So if we have large slug size, then we have to, or very long slugs, then the number of pigs intermittently we have to be increasing. And again, the pig sensors can detect product movement. That is one thing here, if we have to follow this particular batch mode, one advantage is that some of the pig sensors can detect the product movement, and you will be able, that's another method that we want to use to see if we can theoretically also determine the length of the interface. That is very, very important. If we have to follow any of the modes of transportation in batching, we need to know the length of the interface. And we found out that if this method has to be followed, the pigs must be transitioned between the pump stations. But this will require additional labor from time to time. And the pigs may cause increase or additional turbulence between the slugs.
Doc, I'm going to interrupt you. I would think that would be such a significant issue if we have cavitation of the pumps.
Yes, that will be. And we shall revisit this as we get into the cavitation and vapor pressure issue.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the pigs may cause increased additional turbulence, and this actually is not good for us, especially with regards to the pumps. Next, please. The batch mode C, which we call the modern batching technique, uses new technology for interface dictation and tracking product movement. This has been tried by a company in Canada, and their results actually are very much localized, so I don't take that as a global result that can apply to the state of Alaska or the Alaskan case. This was by Trans Mountain Pipeline Company. We have some equipment. We are trying to build a flow loop, and not until we'll test this equipment, we won't be able to confirm the practicality of this particular system. But again, if we have our flow loop constructed and built, we shall have a densitometer. As the name implies, this measures the specific gravity of the product in the pipeline, and this can also dictate changes in the product densities along the pipeline. But again, we need to know where to install these densitometers. We also need to install sound velocity interface dictators. This will detect changes in sound velocity of the product. Like you have the GTL, we have different sound velocity. And then the crude oil itself, we have different sound velocity. And with this type of sensor, we can monitor where what is moving at what point in the pipeline. We also have another sensor we call the colorimeter, C-O-L-O-R-I-M-E-T-E-R, colorimeter. It's not calorimeter, it's color. And this dictates the color changes on pipeline products. But again, this means that we need to collect our samples in between lines and then check what type of product we have online. Also, we have what we call distributed control system that will be installed at the receiving end, say in the refinery or in the tank farms. And this is to optimize the control of the product movement. And this will also help to allocate the crews to their various tank farms, tank batteries.
Doctor?
We have
a question for you, Doc.
Yes, please. Please mention your name.
This you say is very effective, but it's pretty expensive and to install and maintain. Would it be cost-effective, do you think, at all, so that it would be possible to use?
We have run, yes. I have two graduate students that are running the economics. I know I don't want to give the economic numbers now because they are not verified, but this is really very, very expensive. Comparatively, it is very, very expensive. And looking at what actually the information we got from Trans Mountain Pipeline Company, from their own localized information, I think this is a high technology that is highly expensive.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And then one good thing about this technique also is that it helps to maintain the GTL purity than other modes. Again, the length of interface is a major problem, and if we can get the lesser the length of interface, the better for the batching mode. But right now, we don't have a model that is actually verified to be the model that can give us the interface or dictate the interface length as we move this product. Again, this is a complex technology, like I said before, but it's effective. It's the economics that actually we have to dictate whether the initial expense will be justified by the final income.
Well, hey, Doc, this is Representative Gatto, and I recognize it's expensive, and at the moment you haven't revealed what that means, but you do wind up with a pretty amazing product on the bottom end that's more valuable than virtually anything else that comes out of a pipe.
That is correct, yes. So we are running the economics now, but again, it all depends on the volume of throughput that you get at the end of it. If we are producing about, say, a test run of about 40,000 barrels of clean diesel a day, we want to see that that can justify the initial cost of this particular technique. So we are running it at 10,000 barrels, we are running it at 25,000 barrels per day increment, and see how the volume of throughput is going to affect the cost. But again, I have not verified that, but I cannot give that as a number right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Next slide, please. So these are some of the capital investments that we envisage if we have to follow the batching mode. We have to have new holding tanks on the slope. We have to have new storage tanks at the terminal. And again, it all depends whether we want to refurbish or build separate new tanks at the terminal. If we have enough that are sitting idle, we can refurbish them to meet the conditions for this new product. Okay, we need to install distributed control systems, DCS, and accessories at both the inlet and outlet points. And the purpose of this will be to direct the various logs to automatically empty in the storage tanks, their respective storage tanks. We also need to install or build relief tanks at the pump stations. We need additional piping from GTL facility to the taps. And then we need to run pigs as often as needed. In every project analysis, one has to have contingency plan. We need to set aside capital to combat emergencies and then to ensure there is no prolonged shutdown. This is very, very important because when you shut down the pipeline for a prolonged time, especially during the cold weather time, there are a lot of other problems that can result. Next slide, please. Now, looking at the coming gold mold, this requires minimal capital and labor because we have to premix all these the two products and then move them to the traps. Low-grade GTL can be produced at the North Slope, so we don't have to hydrocrack. We just have to get the zinc crude, and we can send it, and we go without doing the final refining, hydrocracking, as let me use that terminology. But the problem is that the GTL purity is fully lost, but then we have higher output of diesel and gasoline at the downstream end after refining. So though we lose the GTL purity at the beginning, but at the end point, we can recover it. So based on using available infrastructure in place, we decided to run more tests on the commingled mode. So what I'm going to talk about from now on is going to be based on commingled mode of transportation. Next slide, please. So why did we choose the commingled mode? The expected loss of purity of the product mixture and a trade-off between the loss in product value due to contamination and cost of keeping the product pure at the terminal. So we have to balance what we are losing from the purity, and then what we are going to be spending at the terminal building new infrastructure. And again, we looked at the flexibility of using the existing infrastructure with minimal addition to capital costs for transportation. We were able to get some information on cost of building new tanks, different sizes. We had to blow this up, simulate this to different sizes. And all this helped us to refocus our study to more details in commingled flow mode. Then the commingled mode of transportation does not require additional facility because the present relief tank system is capable of handling the crude oil GTL blend product. And this is something that Alyeska will also verify. This might be wrong, but by discussing with people in Alyeska, we were able to find out that the relief tanks can do the job now. But I forgot to mention at the beginning of this presentation that though DOE sponsored this project, but Alyeska supplied all the crude oil for the analysis, and BP supplied the GTL for the analysis too. Please, next slide. So what are the issues? If we have to go commingling, what are the transportation issues that would face? One thing we looked at was that the Trans-Alaskan pipeline system was designed for a particular type of crude oil. Then what will happen when we have another type of product that is transported, that is pumped through the taps? What flow problems might exist? What will be the effect of this product, or what will be the effect of cold temperature on this product? There is a property, fluid property, we call the gelling ability of that fluid. When the fluid stands idle for some time, it is bound to gel, it's bound to be more viscous, it's bound to be a little bit thicker. I'm using a layman's terminology here. So how will this affect a restart if this were to be during the cold weather situation? What effect would it have on the pump? And then we also need to look at the phase behavior, that is, are we flowing single-phase fluid? Are we flowing two-phase fluid? And if it is two-phase, then it becomes a problem with cavitation, as we talked about before. We have flashing, the possibility that we have flashing. So we want to find out under what condition do we have a single-phase in the pipeline, and under what condition do we have a two-phase? And what will be the effect of the solids precipitation? The major problem by discussing with Alyeska at the first is wax production, wax deposition. So we want to find out the effect of transporting GTO with crude oil on the wax deposition. Next slide, please. So these are some of the challenges that we anticipated and that we wanted to do further studies on. These are the first column on the left there is you have the fluid properties. We have what we call the gelling ability, the building or structure of this particular fluid. We call it the gel strength. Then we have the density and viscosity measurement, and this will help us in trying to find out what type of phase we are flowing. Is that all liquid phase or multi-phase? And then there is a terminology we call the rheology, which actually relates to the force of movement and the velocity. And they are all used to determine the horsepower requirement that the pump will need to move the fluid. So if we know the type of fluid we have, we'll be able to determine what type of force will be necessary to move that fluid. Because a fluid that is gel-like will require more force than a fluid that is water-like. So we want to find out what type of fluid mixture we have. And we use this property of rheology, which is the relationship between the force of movement and the velocity of flow, to determine the pumping horsepower requirement. Please, if I use a terminology you don't understand, let me know. And then the solid deposition study, we wanted to find out the tendency of asphaltene and wax deposition. And you all know that any or both of them can create major problems in terms of or with regards to corrosion of the pipeline. Next slide, please. So, in a nutshell, we ran different tests. What we did was to take some mixtures of the GTL crude. We had four different ratios. We had one GTL to four crude. We had one GTL to three crude. We had one GTL to two crude. And we had the best cases of GTL and crude oil standalone. And the crude oil we use, we are the tap mixes. That's the crude oil we get from the taps. So these we are not obtained from the slope. These we are not obtained from the refinery. But these are tap mix. So we ran some experiments to determine the building of structure of this mixture, different ratios. And we found out that the fluid gel strength generally do not pose a problem during normal pipeline operations. That is, at normal pipeline temperatures of between, as we got from Alaska, between 60 and 122 degrees Fahrenheit, under normal conditions, we don't have problem with the gelling of the fluid mixture at all the ratios tested. But again, we had to go below sub-zero temperature, because if you have a shutdown situation and the tap is staying idle for one type of maintenance or the other, then there might be a problem. So we had to go below the sub-zero situation. And gel strengths are reduced as a percentage of GTL in the crude oil mixture increases. So with higher ratio of GTL in the crude oil, we found out that the gelling ability, the building of structure of the mixture, was very much reduced, even at temperatures of 20 below. So this was a very good information. But we could not, we did not have the ability to go below 20 degrees, below minus 20. So that's something else that we need to look at, but we hope we don't get to a situation where the taps will stand at temperature below that point. And then the potential for cold restart problems after a prolonged winter shutdown of the pipeline increases as the flue jet strength increases. So as you reduce, as you increase the amount of GTL in the mixture, jet strength is reduced. But as you reduce the amount of GTL, the jet strength increases. So there is a problem of minimal GTL mixing with the crude oil at very cold temperature situations, up to minus 20. Next slide, please. Then we try to find out the effect of density. We find out that the density of each of the samples was measured at different temperatures, from 32 degrees Fahrenheit to 122 degrees Fahrenheit inclusive. And the density values decreased with increasing temperature, which is normal. So as the temperature would increase, the density, the heaviness of this particular fluid would decrease. And then what we mean by AKGTL, that is Alaskan GTL. And for purpose of clarity and having obtained this permission, AKGTL represents the GTL that we obtained from BP that was manufactured here in Alaska. And we found out that the Alaskan GTL added to the samples caused a reduction in density also because of the light ends, okay, that are contained in the GTL. Next slide, please. I will make an attempt to use this graph to illustrate what I mean by rheology. This is, like I said before, this is the relationship of the force of movement to the velocity of flow. So, and we use that to classify the type of fluid that will flow in the pipeline under different conditions. Obviously, we have what we call the Newtonian flow, just like water. We have anything that is not water is non-Newtonian. And we can further classify that based also on the force of movement and the velocity of this particular mixture as the Bingham plastic fluid or the power law fluid. And this is just an illustration. And if you go to the next slide, please. So using this illustration of determining or identifying what type of fluid system we have flowing under different conditions, we found out that the Alaskan GTL would show what we call a more relaxed, a pseudoplastic behavior. Pseudoplastic in the sense that it's an elastic type of flow and will require less pump horsepower to flow within the temperature ranges of minus 4 degrees centigrade to 122 degrees Fahrenheit. Minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit to 122 degrees Fahrenheit. That is from minus 20 degrees centigrade to 50 degrees centigrade. That's the conversion. Then the crude oil shows Newtonian behavior at temperatures of 68 degrees Fahrenheit. And again, below the temperature of 68 below 20 degrees centigrade, which is 68 degrees Fahrenheit, the crude oil will behave more like a ketchup, you know, like a gelled type of fluid, which is more difficult to pump. Bingham plastic fluid is like a ketchup we used to eat our
hamburgers.
Yes. Okay. So we have also blends of Alaskan GTL and the crude oil. When we blend them, and we find out that they are more of elastic mixture, pseudoplastic behavior at higher temperatures. And then at intermediate temperatures or room temperature, they behave like Newtonian. And then at temperatures below or very much at freezing or below, they are behaving like Bingham plastic, and this is where we have a problem. Because the Bingham plastic flow characteristic indicates that high pumping power requirements are necessary to restart the pipeline after extended shutdown at low temperatures. So this is a major finding of this work, that if you add GTL to, that's the Alaskan GTL, to the crude oil at very low temperatures, we have a problem of requiring higher pumping power. So this is something that pipeline designers and mechanical engineers designing the pumps will have to look at when they are assuming this possibility comes into play in the state of Alaska. Please, next slide. Sorry, I'm taking more time than allotted. The effects of vapor pressure, and again, this regards the cavitation we talked about. The vapor pressure increased with addition of Alaskan GTL, but again, it did not increase up to a level that would cause a concern, because we still operated at a vapor pressure below the minimum TAPS operating pressure. And what this means is that as long as we are below the minimum TAPS operating pressure, we are now flowing a single phase flow. That is, only liquid is flowing, and this is a very, very important information. So we don't have this problem of cavitation when we have GTL mixed with the crude oil at all temperatures tested. And then we ensure that the blends would flow through the tubs as compressed liquids from inception to discharge. So no disintegration, is a compressed liquid we have. We don't have any flashing, and there's no problem. And vapor formation in the pipeline as the blends are transported is not possible. And it's determined that under the current TAPS operating conditions and for all blend ratios considered, the fluid will always exist as a single phase liquid throughout the pipeline conditions. And this is a very important conclusion. Now, next slide, please. For solid deposition, we had asphaltene flocculation tests. And both asphaltene flocculation and deposition will cause a major problem in the transportation of blends. We found out that for crude or for TAPS crude, asphaltene is very stable. That is to say that the crude oil can retain some quantity of asphaltene in solution, no problem. But then when we add the GTL, there was asphaltene precipitation, and this is a major concern. And this precipitation or flocculation, as we may call it, that is when you gather light bubbles of all these flocculants together, you have flocculation occurring even when 5.7% by volume of Alaskan GTL is added. And this is a major problem. That is to say that you have to use dispersants in order to make sure you treat this problem from the onset. And the problem with the deposition is that if left untreated, they might settle and then create some in-situ corrosion, that is in-place corrosion wherever they are deposited, especially along welded areas and joints. Next slide, please. In summary, we found out that the gel strength is not a significant factor of concern, and therefore, up to temperature of minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit, the gel strength wouldn't pose a problem. That's the gel strength, the gelling ability, the building of structure of GTL and crude oil mixture. And we found out that the Bingham fluid, that is the characteristic shear stress and velocity gradient relationship, indicated that high pumping power will be required during prolonged shutdown situations. And again, it's good to know the problem ahead of time, so if you want to work around it, that is fine.
Doctor?
We also, next slide, please.
Doc, Representative Wilson has a question for you.
Yes, please.
The question is, because of the high pumping power requirement after a long shutdown in under cold temperatures, do we know how much the pipe, I mean, the pipe wasn't, you know, made for that or developed for that to begin with. So is that possible? Do we know that yet?
Yeah, no, the pipe can withstand the horsepower requirement. It's just that we need high horsepower requirement pumps.
So that's just a higher cost?
Yeah, higher cost, the booster pumps.
Okay.
Chairman.
Right.
Yeah, and we have Representative Johnson with a question.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Doctor. I'm wondering, is this something that could be done on a seasonal basis where sometimes a year we do it and sometimes we don't? And what would be required to do that? And maybe I'm ahead of the presentation.
Well, if we do this seasonally, what happens, assuming we do this in summer?
Right.
What do we do in winter? We need to start all over again. So the cost is going to quadruple. We are trying to avoid cost. We cannot operate it at our own convenience.
The cost answer is good enough for me.
Yeah, okay.
We have Representative Seaton with a question.
Yes, sir.
The Bingham fluid flow, now, didn't I see back in the earlier part of the presentation that if you had no GTLs in here at the low temperature, the crude oil, didn't that have the same characteristics? And I guess...
The earlier slides show that the crude oil will exhibit Newtonian behavior, like water.
At low temperatures?
Yes, they will behave like water, so they don't pose much gelling problem.
Okay, so I guess I'm trying to get a comparison. So if we had just a heavy mixture of crude and a long prolonged shutdown at 20 degrees or below 20 degrees, or below minus 20.
Yes.
Is the power requirement then for a mixed GTL crude going to be higher or less than a cold crude oil only in the pipeline?
The power requirement for the mixture will be higher.
Okay.
Yes. Next slide. We have it. So based on the first behavior, we have also found out that the mixture at all ratios, 1:1, 1:2, 1:3, 1:4, we flow as a single fluid, and this actually removes the problem of, or kind of minimizes the problem of pump cavitation, flowing only air around the pump. And then the mitigation of solid deposition remains the primary challenge of transportation. Or solid deposition, because of the flocculation of osmotins, this is a major problem that we have to be looked into. So dispersants, we have to be introduced. Like they use the DRS now to reduce the frictional effects. So under commingled flow profile, decrease in throughput in the task can result to faster and more deposition of these solids along the pipe wall. So if we have, for any reason, a decrease in the throughput, is going to increase the depositional effects of these solids along the walls of the pipe wall. And the net effect or the resultant effect in the long run is going to be corrosion, pitting corrosion or in-situ corrosion. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and I'll be glad to answer more questions, sir.
For the first question, Representative Wilson has one.
Yes, sir.
I guess the question, so for all the research that you've done and everything, right now the main conclusion is the less that's flown through that pipe, the more problem we're going to have with corrosion.
If we have to follow this route of flowing the mixture, without putting enough dispersants to take care of the solid deposition, then we have corrosion sometime in future. Yes.
And follow up. So then, the the fewer, the less the volume that's going through, then the more expense it's going to cost, because we're going to have to pick it more often or whatever.
That is not what I meant. When I meant by slowing down is assuming that, if you look at the last one, I said decreasing throughput in taps can result to faster and more deposition of these solids along the pipe wall. So if you reduce the throughput by reducing the amount of GTL or reducing the amount of crude oil that will flow through the taps, that is going to help some of the solids to be building faster than ordinarily if you have higher throughput. The higher the throughput, then you have faster movement of these solids that will be, most of them will be moving in solution.
Right, but if we don't, you know, find a way to do this, then it's going to, you know, just keeping things as they are presently, we're going to have more trouble as the volume decreases.
Well, if you are talking of keeping things as we have now, we are flowing only crude oil right now.
Right.
Right, and we are not. I'm not commenting on what is happening right now. I'm commenting on what will happen if we have crude oil GTL mixture.
I'm going to ask a question. Peter Cook, are you online? Peter Cook? He was.
Hello. Yes, I am online.
Okay. Can you hang on one more minute? And because I do want to get you on the line. I guess you're 9 hours away. I'm not sure how many, but it's probably getting pretty late where you are.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. So we need to kind of summarize the questions here for Dr. Chuck Wu. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Doctor. You had mentioned a couple of times that adding dispersants. What dispersants do you add? Are they a derivative of petroleum products that we can distill up on the slope, or is it something that has to be transported up there? What exactly are you talking about when you say dispersants?
Well, what I'm talking about is something that will not allow these solids to get together. So different companies will have different dispersants. I don't know anyone. No, they are not manufactured here at the slope, but you have companies that trade on most of these dispersants, like you have companies that trade on DRA, drag reducing agents.
And so, Mr. Chairman, are we talking a large volume of this dispersant? I mean, are we talking millions of gallons, or?
I wouldn't be able to say that because I don't know. It all depends on the formulation. So I don't know the chemical interaction that will require, that will be required. So I wouldn't be able to give numbers at this point.
Okay.
On a laboratory scale, we can run it and then get some information. But on a fuel testing procedure, that might be something outside the scope of what we can do here.
Thanks, Doc. I very much appreciate you taking this much time for us.
You're welcome, sir.
And so, Peter Cook, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How much time do you need?
I think I can get through in a fair bit shorter time. Depends on the questions at the end, but 15, 20 minutes?
Oh, you have more than that. Take all the time you need. Go ahead.
Would you have any more questions for me?
Not at the moment. You might want to listen to Mr. Cook's presentation while you're on the air.
Sure, I will. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, thanks very much for the invitation. Presumably you've got also my slides up on the screen?
Yes, we do.
Okay, if I can move off the first slide to the second. I think what I'd just like to do is take you through an overview of the company. An overview of our technology. I'll talk a little bit about the overall experience and our current operations, and then I'll dwell a little bit on the market, the products first, and the market, and some product initiatives.
And as soon as you're done, we'll all buy your stock. Thank you.
My second slide is a very simplistic slide, which I think, in a way, you guys have gone through already with Dr. Chukwu. It just explains what the overall process is. It's essentially three main steps. The first step is natural gas reforming. And again, here we show who our licensor is. It's held at Topso. Take natural gas and oxygen and form a syn gas. That syn gas is passed through to the second step, which is the Sasol proprietary step, which is the Fischer-Tropsch conversion. We're using a cobalt catalyst and fairly high temperature. This creates a wax and a condensate stream, and water as a byproduct. The third step is a Chevron proprietary product upgrade, which is a hydrocracker. It takes the wax and the condensate and breaks them down essentially to very high quality diesel and naphtha and a small amount of LPGs.
I'm going to interrupt here a moment. Since we're going to be doing this in a fairly cold environment, what percent of a gallon of GTL is wax?
I'm not with you. Are you talking about final product?
Well, when we put it in the pipeline, I wanted to know if we're putting in a half a gallon of wax and a half a gallon of others, or is it a
much different ratio? Well, the wax is fully broken down or hydrocracked, and hence we have a very nice diesel coming out the other end. So there's no wax left in the final diesel product.
Okay.
If one does a full product upgrading. Now, I know Dr. Chukwu mentioned that if you do the commingled stream, you would there's a possibility of using a what they call a stim crude, but our I don't think we've done anywhere near the level of work that he's done, but our indication is that you do need some form of stabilization and mild hydrotreating in order to make a synthetic crude that can flow. Okay, can I move on to the next slide?
Yeah, please do.
this really talks about the company, the coming together of Sasol and Chevron and formation of a joint venture, Sasol Chevron, which has been in existence now from 2000. Sasol's clearly a global drive for cleaner fuels, its technology, GTL technology, which it's been utilizing in its South African operations now for some 50 years, huge level of operating and maintenance experience, as well as technology commercialization and market GTL product marketing. From the Chevron side, we have obviously their position as a global international oil company, excuse me, their marketing experience, their experience in finding reserves of oil and gas, and of course their technology, which is their hydroprocessing technology. This comes together in the form of a company, Sasol Chevron, a joint venture company based in London, and Sasol Chevron's overall drive and strategy is to build, own, and operate and market GTL facilities around the world. If I can move on to the next slide. This really just highlights where in the world we find the reserves of gas, where we find the ready-made GTL markets. The GTL markets we've shown as the United States, Brazil, Europe, and Southeast Asia, and Australia. And the four sort of square blocks represent effectively Sasol Chevron and Sasol's first endeavors. The first one being the Oryx plant in Qatar. The one in Nigeria is the Escravos site, which I'll talk about a little bit in more detail. And then, of course, our current activities that we're busy with are looking to develop projects in Australia and Algeria. And next slide, please. Just a couple of pictures of the first commercial GTL facility in the world. This is the Oryx plant, a joint venture between Sasol and Qatar Petroleum. which is producing first product as we, as effectively as we speak. My understanding is the first shipment will take place literally weeks from now. Just showing you some pictures there of the facility. It's a 34,000 barrel per day facility. Next slide, please.
Representative Wilson has a question for you.
Sure.
I take it that the main reason that you don't have the problem that we would have up here is basically because of the temperature of where your areas are.
I wouldn't say that it's as simple as that. I don't know if bit complex at this point in time.
Is it fair to say
it depends on what final product one decides to take out of the plant.
Right. Is it fair to say that when you make GTL, you're already at the destination and do not need to commingle it with any crude?
We would maybe can I address this the question a bit later. We do not see the value of the final products, particularly the diesel, which is about 70% of the output of our plants, are so much above crude that the uplift above crude price is in fact so big that it is effectively one of the major drivers to and enablers of this technology. So to commingle it with crude in even, you know, in whatever form, unless you can get the product back out at the other end of the pipeline and make use of the high quality, which is essentially zero sulfur, high cetane, you actually destroy a lot of value.
It's a perfect gallon, isn't it?
It's a perfect. Well, I mean, it's a product which you can run a diesel engine on without anything, without adding anything to it.
Thank you.
Can I just go to the next slide? I think some of this will come a little bit clearer as we move through the presentation. The next is a depiction of the what we call EGTL or the Escravos Nigeria project. Again, same size as the Oryx project, 34,000. It's progressing. We have site activities. The engineering is complete. Procurement and early construction is also advancing. And this project is due for startup in 2009. Next slide. The next slide, we talk, over my next three slides, I will talk a little bit about the product and the market and how, where we see them fitting in and what the benefits are. There are two main products, and effectively this is also one of the benefits of the technology, is that instead of getting a slew of products out the end of a GTL facility, with this low temperature fissure drops, we essentially managed to get two products out, both of which are excellent end products. It's a diesel and a naphtha. The diesel is super high quality, low sulfur, low cetane, and it turns out to be an excellent blend for upgrading of poorer quality crudes within a refinery. Or a neat fuel, and that I will come to a little bit in my next slide. But the diesel will go into, obviously, the diesel market, and the diesel market is huge, as depicted by the massive sphere in current market size of 13.5 million barrels. And the size of a typical facility of a 34,000 barrel per day facility, which will deliver around about 23,000 barrels per day of diesel, around about 70%, 65 to 70% of the throughput, you can see the size of the little, the tiny little sphere above it, which is Ori. As one moves through over the next 10 years, you will see the growth, cumulative growth, which is the smaller but second largest sphere on the right-hand side. That is just the growth over the next 10 years in diesel. And then at the top, you will see what the sort of overall capacity will be of our projected capacity for Sasol Chevron, which we've projected at 300,000 barrels. And at the bottom, we do a projection of what the GTL industry of the world potentially could get to. And you can see that it has to, that, you know, even if this is all materialized, the percentage would only be 4% of the demand, or 13% of the new total demand. So that is to try and give scale to just how this diesel will fit into the world market. Next slide, please. This is really just the talking about the market channels. We have two, the one above the sort of heavy line, or the line in the middle, and the one below. The one above is a blend stock route, and really what we're talking about here is using the excellent properties of the diesel and allowing a conventional refiner to optimize his refinery by potentially digging deeper into the barrel, or even running heavier crudes, and yet still being able to deliver diesel on spec. And this would go both to the premium motor and to the truck markets. And that is the route which we are currently envisaging all the product going from Oryx as it starts to flow right now. Going forward into the future, we do believe that neat applications, particularly dedicated bus fleets within large polluted cities such as Tokyo, London, and others, could well run and show huge benefits because of reductions of various air qualities, which is depicted in the next slide. So here we are looking now at a slide which shows the percentage reduction or percentage change of various emissions, and the darker bar is pure GTL, and the lighter bar is a mixture of GTL diesel and 50% EU diesel baseline, which is the typical EN 590, 50 ppm sulfur diesel. And you can see there quite significant reductions in hydrocarbon emissions, carbon monoxide emissions. NOx is smaller, but particulate matter is quite significantly reduced, and as well as CO2. The fuel consumption is moves in the slightly in the negative direction. The GTL diesel is a lighter density than conventional diesels, and hence when one works out fuel consumption on a miles per gallon or kilometers per liter basis, there is a small penalty. This, however, was done on a conventional run on a conventional engine. In fact, you will see in the next slide, and when we come to it, that it was run with a Daimler Chrysler, a Mercedes-Benz engine, where only the software was optimized and no hardware optimization. And moving forward, if one does further optimization of the engine, we believe that the fuel consumption could almost the negative movement in fuel consumption could almost be eradicated.
Mr. Cook, I notice on the previous slide, the very top says meeting new air quality demands. Are you having something in Europe that involves how diesel is formulated so that it won't, it'll be allowed to have zero sulfur or some amount of sulfur?
Yeah. Sorry, could you just repeat the question?
Just curious about what is happening in the European theater with regard to emissions and air quality demands and standards, as so much as maybe is GTL a very fine product if those demands increase?
It is very much in demand, and in fact, it's the European market is where most of the, if not all of the first product to be manufactured will find itself. They are leading the move in reduction of sulfur, going from 50 down to 15 and then eventually 5 ppm. GTL diesel has essentially 0 ppm sulfur.
Thank you.
The next number of slides from here through to the end of my presentation are pictures, so just to lighten up the presentation a bit. The next slide is just work to indicate work that we've done together with Daimler Chrysler on some of those emission tests. The next slide indicates the Alliance for Synthetic Fuels in Europe, which is a number of fuel suppliers, apart from ourselves, Sasol Chevron, as well as an engineering manufacturer that are working together because of the fact that they see such an absolute fit between this GTL diesel and the drive for cleaner and cleaner air emissions and fuel specs. If you can go to the next slide. There was a very interesting GTL challenge which we did, which was done by Sasol Chevron at the time of the inauguration of the Oryx project. We took a number of standard vehicles, diesel vehicles, Toyota Land Cruisers, and we drove them from Sasolburg in South Africa, 11,000 kilometers across Africa on GTL diesel, and delivered them to Doha in Qatar. And if you go through to the next slide, please, you will there see exactly, this is one of the refueling stops. You can see the absolute clarity of the diesel as it is being filled into the car. And then my second last slide, the journey's end. This gives a very clear and visual demonstration of a subsidiary benefit, and just shows you the oil on the two dipsticks on the left hand side, the GTL diesel that had run 11,000 kilometers, and on the right hand side, we did an oil change and only 5,000 kilometers of standard diesel. And you can just see the color or differentials in the oil. And hence, you can one deduct in terms of engine wear and longevity. And that really brings me to the end of my presentation and short pitch. And I would like to take any questions at this point in time.
Well, good for you. You're right at a half hour. How about engine longevity with cleanest diesel? I mean, you talked about 11,000 kilometers, but we probably want to talk about 200,000.
Yeah.
How you doing, sir? No, I'm on teleconference.
Probably home.
Do we lose him?
I think he hung up, yeah. Probably was talking on the cell phone.
Kids' fault.
But we have Kevin Banks here. you're okay with just question. We had a few people that just really were concerned about questions. Kathy Forrester is commissioner of AOGCC. Kathy, are you online? I guess not.
Oh, yes, I am. I was muted.
Good. Oh, well, thank you for being there. And Mike Radassi, project.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. So we've got a few people who are there for questions. And Kevin, did you have a testimony to give?
No, sir.
You're here for questions. Okay. David Robertson, are you online? And lastly, Peter Lidiak from the Petroleum Institute.
Yes, this is Peter Lidiak.
Peter, did you have any testimony, any concluding statements or questions that you had?
No, I am just here as a resource for you.
Well, thank you very much. That concludes all of the people who wanted to speak.
Well, I was going to speak. This is Mike Radassi.
Somebody won.
What was the name? Go ahead and identify yourself again and then proceed.
Yeah, this is Mike Radassi, and I'm calling in to give testimony.
Okay, so you're with BP?
I'm with BP, yes, sir.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony about gas-to-liquids technology and issues facing its potential application to Alaska's North Slope gas. Unlike the folks who had just spoke, I do not have presentation materials. I will be speaking probably for about 10 minutes or so, and feel free to interrupt me as we move on. By way of introduction, I am Michael Gradassi. I'm a project development manager for BP's Conversion Technology Center in Houston, Texas. I have more than 33 years experience in the petroleum industry, and for the last 18 years, I have been involved with the development and application of technologies addressing the conversion of natural gas to liquids. During that time, I have given and published several papers on the economics of gas to liquids technology and have provided economic research guidance to help steer its development toward more favorable commercialization options. I am a strong proponent of gas to liquids technology, but I am an even stronger proponent of identifying and carrying out the best project option for any given gas resource asset. I am here to tell you that gas to liquids is not the best project option for Alaska's North Slope gas. GTL commercial viability depends on several things, including plant site, capital costs, gas costs, and market opportunities. In my remarks, I would like to focus on the first two, which are plant site and capital costs, for these lead to a staggering cost for a GTL plant on the North Slope, as I will explain later. And these two, together with gas costs, likely would render it uneconomic when compared to GTL plants in other parts of the world that could benefit from substantially more benign locations, which are not remote, enjoy substantially lower construction costs, and where significantly mild weather conditions help to support ongoing operations and maintenance. By way of background, gas to liquids technology is the chemical conversion of natural gas to a pumpable synthetic crude oil and or products, as we have heard, that can be further converted much like conventional crude oil to refined products. The process involves three steps. We've heard them. The first step is where natural gas is chemically converted at pressure and very high temperature to an intermediate called syngas. This intermediate is then chemically converted to yet another intermediate or paraffinic or waxy hydrocarbons. And this waxy intermediate can be mildly treated in a third step to reduce its waxiness and convert it to a pumpable synthetic crude oil. This synthetic crude oil and the refined products made from it are especially attractive because of their properties, purity, and cleanliness. And I think we just heard that in the last presentation in much in some very good detail. Now, BP has been involved in developing just such technology since the early 1980s and is currently demonstrating it at our Nikiski test facility. BP's test facility is designed to convert about 3 million standard cubic feet per day of natural gas into 300 barrels per day of synthetic crude oil into three major process steps, just described.
Let me interrupt you here for
yes,
just a second, because that's a question I've had for quite some time.
Yes.
Of every 100 units of gas to produce a unit of GTL,
yep.
do we consume two-thirds of the resource, one-third of the resource, half of the resource?
The figures I like to use, and I use them later on in my remarks here, about 10,000 cubic feet of natural gas is used to produce one barrel of GTL liquid. And if you count all of the energy requirements, both for the process itself and also for the supporting utilities and everything else, so your steam system and everything else that goes into it, you'll be using up close to between 50 and 60% of your resource. That's correct. On an energy content basis.
If we just looked at BTUs in the gas that we need to make
50 to 60% of your BTUs, you're going to be you'll have the barrel of GTL will represent 50 to 60% of your total BTUs.
Okay, thanks much. That's helpful.
Okay, but you will hear higher figures if folks are only addressing the process itself, rather than adding in all the additional supporting utilities.
Go ahead.
Okay. The synthetic crude oil out of our Nikiski plant is stored in a storage tank, and then it is exported via truck transport for further processing. The facility cost $100 million to build. But the capital and the capacity and the cost of BP's demonstration facility is a far cry from that of the 400,000-barrel-per-day commercial-scale ANS GTL plant situated on the North Slope, where both the remoteness of the site and the Arctic conditions add substantially to a plant's capital costs. In his document, the Operational Challenges in Gas-to-Liquids Transportation through Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, Dr. Chuck Wu does not address the North Slope GTL plant itself, and as a matter of fact, I remember he explained that. But he implies its capacity when he describes handling single-day production volume batches upwards of 400,000 barrels per day. The scale of such a GTL facility is unprecedented and would closely resemble a conventional crude oil refinery in size, would consume about 4 BCF a day of natural gas, and would have an expected capital cost in the several tens of billions of dollars. While BP has not recently costed a plant of this scale, we can draw on our recent evaluation of a GTL plant for our gas assets in Colombia. While not Arctic, the site is remote in that it sits over 600 miles inland on the other side of the Andes Mountains. Drawing on that engineering evaluation indicates that a capital cost estimate in excess of $40 billion is not unreasonable. And this $40 billion is the cost before recognizing the added cost of building a plant that can operate reliably under the severe Arctic conditions of the North Slope.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
At such a remote location, you said 600 miles?
Yep.
Why not build a pipeline and ship it to someplace else? And then convert it to just LNG?
In that particular, there'd be a whole other offline discussion, but in that particular case, Colombia does not enjoy the infrastructure that the United States has in terms of gas pipeline transport. And I'd be happy to discuss that more with you, but if that answers your question.
Go ahead.
Okay. Now, similar capital costs can be inferred from GTL plant construction costs published by one of our competitors who are in the early stages of constructing the largest ever GTL plant in Qatar. Their plant at 140,000 barrels per day is one-third the capacity envisioned for the ANS GTL project. To even consider building a plant at three times the scale before this one is commercially proven and do it under the severe conditions of the North Slope would expose its developers to substantial capital and economic risk as it attempts to compete daily with other lower capital cost and lower operating and maintenance cost GTL plants in other parts of the world. Now, in addition, an ANS GTL project would face a number of other large economic hurdles. There are the cost challenges of modifying the tap system to accommodate batched GTL synthetic crude oil along with regular crude to maintain GTL's attractive clean qualities, and our last speaker explained the importance of maintaining those clean qualities if you're really to obtain that market premium. There's also the cost of separating and loading separate cargoes of synthetic crude oil and regular crude oil for transportation to the marketplace. And lastly, there's the continued competition with very low-cost gas that can feed GTL plants in other parts of the world. As I stated earlier, to be commercially viable, GTL projects require low capital costs, low-cost gas, and ongoing low operating and maintenance costs for plant and transportation infrastructure. I have discussed the issue of capital costs. On the issue of gas costs, recognize that every barrel of GTL liquid requires about 10,000 standard cubic feet of natural gas. So every $1 per 1,000 cubic feet of gas fed to the GTL plant adds $10 to every barrel of GTL liquid. $2 adds $20, and so on. And with the GTL plant located on the North Slope, it is reasonable to expect that ongoing operating and maintenance costs would not be low. Thus, an ANS GTL project meets none of the requirements for commercial viability of the GTL plant itself relative to those offered by other potential GTL locations like the Middle East. These challenges are certain to make an ANS GTL project uncompetitive. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Would it be fair to say that you oppose the concept?
I just want to go back to the comment I made really in my introductory remarks that I am a proponent of, you know, of GTL and GTL technology, but I think it's not a blind being a blind proponent. It's also recognizing there's a right place for a project and not a right place for a project.
And
my remarks are geared towards, you know, describing that I don't believe that this is the right place for that project. No.
And I can understand that, but I'm going to ask you a follow-up now. If indeed your company and you were in charge of this operation had 50 trillion cubic feet, potentially 150 trillion cubic feet, stranded on the gas slope because we were not going to send it down a pipeline, would that change your thoughts, your thinking, or at least your conclusion?
Well, it was a hypothetical, and I'm not in charge of the company, so I'm not really at liberty to answer it or, you know, kind of come on with any kind of conjecture. But I think the remarks that I made for what we're talking about at hand, I firmly believe are the right conclusion, yes.
Because, as you know, our intention is to build a pipeline and sell it as nice vaporized gas where we get the highest price for the least amount of money. That's our goal.
Right.
The concern,
and as I mentioned in the last of my more concluding remarks towards the end there, that's the point I was trying to make. You've got to recognize, too, that, you know, there's a value to that gas. One might be able to impute a price of the gas on the North Slope. And every dollar of that gas going into that barrel of GTL liquid, you know, will be reflected as another $10 on the barrel. You've got to compare that to what you might believe are long-term forecasts for crude oil and for products and make a good judgment of whether or not that's worth the risk. Would you actually be getting the returns for the gas that you'd be happy with versus the returns on gas that you could get for the pipeline?
I understand that, but just think of what the return is if we don't build a pipeline.
I understand.
And you're talking about $2 a barrel as a cost? You were talking $10 in, I think, a 42-gallon I couldn't do the math.
Well, no, it's this way. Let's say for the sake of argument that the gas on the North Slope is worth $2 per million BT or $2 per 10,000 cubic feet. You can just pick a number.
Okay.
That $2 per 10,000 cubic feet. Excuse me. At $10, I'm getting myself confused. Let's say it's $2 per 1,000 standard cubic feet. What that does, when you convert that into a barrel of GTL, that $2 per 1,000 standard cubic feet translates to $20 per barrel just in the gas cost alone. Now you have to add on top of that that $20. You'd have to add on top of that all the cost of your capital, and the return on your capital, and, of course, the ongoing maintenance costs. And then compare all those costs to there's the transportation to the marketplace. Then you've got to compare that, you know, to what the marketplace is actually going to bear. And then you have to reflect on whether or not you're getting the return on the capital. You know, is that a better return on the capital than you could get if you invested that capital elsewhere? So I'm sorry I didn't make it myself clear about the gas cost and the gas cost contribution. It wasn't adding $1 to the barrel or $2 to the barrel. $1 gas adds $10 to the barrel. $2 gas adds $20 to the barrel.
It's probably worthless gas on the slope if it stays in the ground and we have no way to send it anywhere. So while it might be $2 per MCF sitting in the ground there, if we have to get it out of the ground, and now we're going to make a barrel of very high quality stuff, $20 higher, would that not be a fair thing to do? Because the alternative is to do nothing.
Well, I think my comments, and maybe if I was actually present, it would be a lot easier for me to explain. But I think I'm not explaining this properly. So, it doesn't make a barrel of GTL for $20. You know, I didn't count up all the costs, but you know, you're going to be getting up there. You'd have to divide all your capital over all the barrels you're manufacturing, the return you want to get on that capital, and then add on top of that, you know, the $10 or $20 just for the gas cost itself. Okay?
Well, you know, I appreciate it. I think you've been pretty helpful. It's just always like to make some sort of a challenging comment.
I'm sorry. I'm not. I was intending to be in Juneau. I never got any further than Seattle last night. I was able to double back to Denver actually on some where I had actually started my trip. But I do understand my bag is up in Ketchikan someplace. It's having a good time.
If indeed, just another question. While you mentioned jets, which burn kerosene. Is there any way that this high-quality diesel meets the specifications for kerosene?
My understanding is BP has not done those specific tests, but there have been others who have done that those types of tests, and they published that in the literature. And that was done together with, I believe, the U.S. DOE, and it may have also been the Department of Defense, the DOD that sponsored those tests. And I can recall a photograph of a jet, I think it was a military jet, in flight, fueled by GTL liquids, yes.
Well, I guess in the military, if you can have cleaner oil and greater range and lower maintenance, you'd pay a lot for a barrel.
I would suspect they would.
Yeah. So anyway, are there any questions from the committee here?
Yeah.
Representative Seaton has a question for you.
Okay.
Thank you. And of course, part of the discussion goes on whether a plant would be sized to do all of the gas on the North Slope, or whether a plant could be sized to be a alternative for expansion capability for a gas line.
Yeah, and recognize my comments were based on the 400,000 barrel a day. Figure that Dr. Chek Wu had in his document, and he had stated that as being a single day production of GTL. So I was working from those figures.
Sure, and thank you, and I realize that, and you know, but part of the things that we're looking at here is also looking at what we have to do for a gas line and whether there are alternative ways of monetizing some of that gas. I guess the other question was, you know, we've got this Prospectus for Development of Alaska Natural Gas from January 2001 by the U.S. Department of Interior. And there they're showing with TAPS throughput with no gas sales in 2015 reaching possibly the 200,000 barrels a day and being uneconomic to run from that point. And so what is the... I mean, would we have a large capital incentive if we could put 100,000 barrels a day and increase that so TAPS is still economic to run, or is kind of the thought that at that time we tear out the TAPS line and build a new smaller pipeline, or I mean, it seems like that's a huge capital cost as well if we strand the rest of Prudhoe Bay up there.
I'm sorry, Representative Seaton, but I'm unable to answer that question. I'm not really part of the BP Alaska project team. I represent just the conversion, the GTL component itself, so I'm really not in a place to respond to that.
Right.
I'm going to ask you or just comment on another issue, because we've got this natural resource of a 48-inch, 800-mile pipe, and when it quits working for us, we have to DRNR it, which is demobilize, remove, and remediate, which is probably a couple of $1 billion, be my guess. Would it enter into your equation if you knew that it's possible to extend the life of a pretty valuable resource before you start spending the money to remove it?
Yeah, my guess is that it probably would work into the equation, yeah. But how exactly it would work in, I don't know.
Okay. Any more questions? Well, I certainly appreciate you staying in there for us. So where are you calling from?
I'm actually calling from outside of Denver. I actually got myself up to ski country, so.
Well, you'd love it here.
We're having what's called a blizzard.
Well, that's why. Actually, it turns out my colleagues in our Juneau office, they waved me off and recommended that I not even attempt the last leg of the flight.
But I'm going to tell you that our ski slope has the highest amount of snow that it's ever had, and you're missing out on some pretty fine skiing.
Well, then I'll have to come back.
Please do, and stop in the Resources Committee, and we'll see if there's any updates that would really be helpful to us. So thanks very much for being there for us.
Thank you.
Unless I hear from someone in the audience who... I'm going to make a little announcement, though. This GTL issue actually applies to another meeting we're having on Monday, which deals with the tariffs for TAPS. I think that most of that will come from the FERC report that we have in front of us. It's about a 100-page report, and we're preparing information to bring it down to a reasonable time limit, or we'd be here till midnight. But you're certainly welcome to come on Monday when we deal with the second issue, and I think it ties into this issue. So thank you much for attending.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I'm sure BP representatives will be at that meeting.
Okay. We are gaveling out. Once again, thank you.